Antaraj Shrima Bhagavatama ki Giridas Maharaj ki Nitai Go Premanande. So what do we discuss in our class from last night?
Bhakti is superior than any other karma, yoga, jnana. So devotees are superior in one sense because they are practicing bhakti. And they are protected by Krishna because Krishna has given a word as well. That essentially does not mean that material body. Next couple of verses was temporary. The world is temporary, and the enjoyment Lord will get is limited. World is limited. Continue on that.
Hmm. Okay, good. Any other points?
The other point what we discussed is what is real wealth. Real wealth is Krishna Prema, and that is what we lack. That is the problem of this world.
Good. Anything else?
The three key memories were Ambarish Maharaj, the way he lived, involved all the senses into Krishna's service. That was the three things. These locals were talking about that.
Good. Any other points? What's going on, Jinesh? Anything else? Okay. So tonight we'll continue from verses 22 to 30, and we'll continue the discussion of the great king whose name is Ambarish Maharaj and the lessons that he is teaching us. Last night we heard the key memory verses. Verses 18 to 20, which were the key memory verses for the section. And we heard there's a very important section, understanding how Maharaj Ambarish is always engaged in devotional service, using all of his senses in every capacity. Okay. So now, tonight we'll continue on with verse 22. In desert countries where there flowed the river Saraswati, Maharaj Ambarish performed great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha Yajna and thus satisfied the master of all yajnas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such sacrifices were performed with great opulence and suitable paraphernalia and with contributions of dakshina to the Brahmanas, who were supervised by great personalities like Vasishta, Asita and Gautama, representing the king, the performer of the sacrifices. Ajay, you like to read them?
When one performs ritualistic sacrifices, as prescribed in the Vedas, one meets expert brahmanas known as Vajnika brahmanas. In Kali Yuga, however, there is a scarcity of such brahmanas. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, the sacrifice recommended in Shastra is Sankirtana Yajna. Yajne Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti E Sumadasha. Instead of spending money unnecessarily on performing yajnas, impossible to perform in this age of Kali because of the scarcity of Yajnika Brahmanas, one who is intelligent performs Sankirtana Yajna. Without properly performed yajnas to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there will be scarcity of rain. Therefore, the performance of yajna is essential. Without yajna, there will be a scarcity of grain, and because of the scarcity, no food grains will be produced, and there will be famines. It is the duty of the king, therefore, to perform different types of yajnas, such as the Ashwamedha yajna, to maintain the production of food grains. Annat bhavanti bhutani. Without food grains, both men and animals will starve. Therefore, yajna is necessary for the state to perform, because by yajna the people in general will be fed sumptuously. The brahmanas and yajnika priests should be sufficiently paid for their expert service. This payment is called dakshina. Ambarish Maharaj, as the head of the state, performed all these yajnas to great personalities like Vasishta, Gautam and Ashita. Personally, however, he was engaged in devotional service as mentioned before. The king or head of the state must see that things go on well under proper guidance, and he must be an ideal devotee as exemplified by Maharaj Amrish. It is the duty of the king to see that the suzerains are produced even in desert countries, what to speak of elsewhere.
So what are the points here? Good. Anything else?
Is this for the leaders, you know, who are not performing any sacrifice? That is that the one of the reasons why we have a lot of scarcity of food? As a leader, yesterday I was giving one devotee was telling me that ISKCON don't need followers, ISKCON need leaders. And you know, as leaders, but, I think we don't need many leaders, but we should understand. What we should understand from this, what kind of performance we should do.
What sort of performance we should do?
In the sense, right, here it says Sankirtan is one that prefer. So we have to encourage people to be more sankirtan. We are encourage people to be more chant all the time.
Yeah, more and more.
By that way, by performing this, do we get everything will be automatically fulfilled?
Yeah, if people follow all the regulative principles and if they chant and do everything. Anything else? Okay. So, what does the word yagya mean? Meaning of this word? Yeah, so it means sacrifice. Yagya means we have to sacrifice something for the pleasure of God. It means to make some sacrifice. So in the previous ages, there were always sacrifices. So generally what would take place, they light the sacrificial fire. Did you see on any of the festivals, they lit a fire? So they light the fire, and this is called yagya. So at that time, they offer oblations of valuable things like ghee, from the cows, and the grains from the fields. And they offer that into the fire, and the fire represents the tongue of the Lord. So by feeding this fire, by sacrificing, then the Lord becomes satisfied. It's an ancient system. So basically, the basic system is, we have to give thanks to God, in order to receive his reciprocation. These days, we live in an atheistic culture or an atheistic society where people do not give thanks to God for what they receive. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that in order to maintain peace in the world, three things are important. What is that verse from the Gita? Bhaktaram jagyatapasam. For the earth to be peaceful, we have to understand who is the bhakta. Bhakta means the person who enjoys the bhoga. What does bhoga mean? Bhoga means anything which is meant for enjoyment. For example, we say the food, which is the bhoga. So you take the food, but these days, because people are atheistic, they do not offer the food to God. Now, they just take the food and they think that is for my enjoyment. They take it themselves. So as soon as you do that, as Krishna describes in the third chapter of the Gita, it becomes pap. And there will be reactions for that. There is karma involved. Because you are taking something without offering it first to God, then you receive reactions. So therefore, it is recommended that whatever we take in human society, whatever is offered by the earth, offered ultimately by God himself, must be offered back to him. That is called sacrifice or yagya. By doing that, you please Krishna, and then he gives you everything you need. So in this day and age, it is said that the types of yagyas or sacrifices that can be performed by human society, all of them have defects. Like when we light the sacrificial fire and the brahmanas chant the mantras, the priests chant the mantras, they don't have the purity or the potency to fully perform the sacrificed properly. So therefore it is recommended in the age of Kali, the only way to fully satisfy Krishna is through chanting the holy names of Krishna, Sankirtan, Jagya. So that sacrifice alone in human society can fully satisfy Krishna and can create all auspiciousness within human society. That's called Sankirtan Jagya. Kali Kali Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, the form of Krishna descends in the form of the name of Krishna. So God is here in the form of His name. And when we chant the names of Krishna, then Krishna becomes satisfied by that chanting. And when He is satisfied, He blesses humanity. So one people can ask the question, how can God be satisfied by this? Prabhupada explains in the very first verse, I believe, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that when someone chants your name, psychologically, you become satisfied when you hear your name. We all like to hear our name. And actually, Dale Carnegie, has anyone heard of Dale Carnegie?
Yes.
Yeah, some people have heard. You've heard of Dale Carnegie? He's a famous, wrote a famous book. What was that book called? How to Win Friends and
Influence
People. It's a very good book. How to Win Friends and Influence People. Is that important for you? You want friends? You want to influence people? Yeah, so it's a very good book, excellent book. So he writes in the book that one way to influence people and to win friends is to use their name. Everyone likes to hear their name. It's a basic principle in human society. If you say someone's name regularly when you're conversing with them, automatically you endear the person. So Prabhupada explains that psychologically Krishna is the same. Right? If you're using his name, if you're chanting his name sweetly, We chant 25,000 names of Krishna a day when we chant our 16 rounds of Maha Mantra. So when you're chanting his names attentively and sweetly, Krishna becomes attracted and indebted and psychologically disposed towards you, favorably disposed. And then he offers you all of the benefits or all of your necessities that you need in life. So therefore, there will be no scarcity on the earth when we simply perform this powerful jagya of purification. Therefore, it says in the age of Kali, the methodology to purify ourselves and the earth is to chant the holy names of Krishna. By chanting mantra, everything becomes purified. So therefore, we chant mantra and then we become purified and society also becomes purified. The world becomes purified. Wherever mantra is present. So therefore in the age of Kali, because everything else is impure, by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, everything else becomes auspicious. Now it says that Ambarish Maharaj, he was a leader who took care of all of the citizens. That was his concern. So he was living in a particular place in India, maybe Delhi, maybe that was Hastinapur, maybe that was the capital, I'm not sure where he was living. But in the western region of India, it is like Rajasthan. The place is desert-like. Even to this day, it's like a desert. So he was concerned for everyone in the kingdom. So he had the brahmanas performing jagyas in that part of the land in order to bring rainfall and to bring food for the citizens. That is the quality of a good leader. All of us are leaders to some capacity. We all lead in some. So what is the nature of a leader? He's always concerned about the welfare of his followers, although those who are dependent upon him. He likes to look after their needs in every way, spiritually and materially. So a perfect leader is someone who's always looking after everyone's needs, in every way. He's always concerned. So Ambarish Maharaj was so concerned about the citizens, he was arranging for everyone in the world, in the land, to become fed properly. We see these days that there are 7 billion of us on the earth, and according to the United Nations, 1 in 8 people on the earth go to bed hungry every night. So that's almost 1 billion people. Every night they're going to bed hungry. Now Prabhupada explains that is simply because of one thing, mismanagement. Because if someone had some brains, And it's not hard to organize that everyone in the world gets fed properly. Something like 70% of the grains which are produced on the earth at this point in time are fed to livestock so that the livestock can then be fed to humanity. So if it was managed properly, all that grain could be used for all the 1 billion hungry people on the earth, and there wouldn't be a problem with hunger on the earth. But because of a mismanagement of its society and misunderstanding of how to run things properly, people are going to bed hungry every night. So that is the defect of modern society. Startling figures. So many of the figures are amazing. If you look at Europe, processed food, you know, if you go to the supermarket and you buy food in packets, which is called processed food, right? Very interesting documentaries on it, the movies at the moment, it's called Sugar. Very good, you should go and see it. And you have blessings to go to the movies and go and see the Sugar documentary. Very interesting documentary. I've heard some preliminary information. So basically, what they're teaching us is don't eat processed food as much as possible. If something's in a packet, and you read on the side there is many, many, many ingredients in that, that means already it's not good for you, really. It's not the best thing for you. The best thing is whole food, whole grains, whole vegetables, milk, everything, unless you're vegan. Everything which is whole food, that should be eaten by humanity. Now, 50% of the processed food in Europe gets thrown into the bins. Which means actually there's no food shortage in the world. It just means there is mismanagement. So Ambarish Maharaj was making sure that everyone on the earth got fed properly, and that is proper leadership. On top of that, he made sure that the brahmanas were properly maintained. So out of the entire social body, which part of the body is the most important in terms of the Varnashram system? The head, right, which is, means the brahmanas, which means the spiritual leaders and preceptors. They are the most important members of society. So he made sure as the king that they were being automatically looked after. Srila Prabhupada said that ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement, is meant to create... leaders and brahmanas. Yeah, in other words, to give brahminical guidance to society. We're meant to spiritually guide society on the right course. So that is meant to be state-funded. In other words, the government is meant to be funding us so that we can do our work properly. But instead, we have to raise our own funds to maintain our own movement. That's how Kali Yuga has become imbalanced. But previously, the brahmana could just absorb himself in teaching others about spiritual subject matters, and he was maintained for his service. So that is not being done. That's the backward nature of Kali Yuga at this point in time. So we see that previously, Ambarish Maharaj was making sure that society was functioning properly, spiritually and materially. And Prabhupada points this out. That is why people need to be fed, prasadam. Why? Because Prabhupada says you cannot preach to a hungry person. You can't teach someone that's hungry. If any of us haven't eaten, right, then we can't concentrate. So materially we have to be looked after, and then spiritually we have to be looked after as well. So the king, the leader, is meant to make sure all those things are taking place within society. That is perfect leadership. So, any points? Yes, sir.
I have a question. I mean, technically speaking, you said that tanya means we are sacrificing something.
Yeah.
So when we perform sangeetana, what are we sacrificing? Is it time and energy?
Yeah, time and energy. It actually works. We see ourselves, when we absorb ourselves in chanting, we see that everything becomes auspicious in our lives. It's practical. That's why it's efficient for this age, because other things don't work. Because other things rely on ingredients and proper time, purity of place, purity of person, all these things. It doesn't work. Kali Yuga is so degraded. We need these higher things. Any points?
The point is sacrifice means everything is sacrificed for the pleasure of the Lord. We are also Prabhupada saying that we don't have the yajnika brahmanas who can purely perform for the pleasure of the Lord because of the impure state is not there. Whereas in Sankirtan, Ignas Prabhu asked, again it's done by distributing the prasadam in the holy name for the pleasure of the Lord. So that's what is said. But then it's complete. Because God is pleased when the holy names are distributed. Especially
by anything else?
Even though in our school days, it was mandatory for us to recite in the morning the human relation principles. So, I was by each other. So, we used to say, be with God, he will be happy. My name is to make people think in a way. So, either one of them is, the man's name is to be the sweetest and the most important sounding in the language. So, we recited for 4 years. So, the time is just to make people to call by the name. And it applies spiritually this. God's name is the sweetest and the most important sound in any language.
Good. Okay. In the sacrifice arranged by Maharaj Ambarish, the members of the assembly and the priests, especially Hota, Udgata, Brahma, and Advayu, were gorgeously dressed, and they all looked exactly like demigods. They eagerly sought to the proper performance of the Jagya. The citizens of the state of Maharaj Ambarish were accustomed to chanting and hearing about the glorious activities of the personality of Godhead. Thus they never aspired to be elevated to the heavenly planets, which are extremely dear even to the demigods.
A pure devotee who has been trained in the practice of chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord and his fame, qualities, form, paraphernalia and so on, is never interested in elevation to the heavenly planets. Even though such places are extremely dear even to the demigods. Narayana Parasarve, Nam Sudanshana, Vipriyadi. Swarga, Pavarka, Aradeshu, Abhidulyarta, Darshina. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. The heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same to a devotee. A devotee is always situated in the spiritual world. Therefore, he does not desire anything. He is known as akama, or desireless, because he has nothing to desire except to render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Maharaj Ambarish was the most exalted devotee of the Lord, he trained his subjects in such a way that the citizens in his state were not interested in anything material, including even the happiness of the heavenly planets.
Okay, what are the points here? No points.
Quote here, which is hell or heaven is just a state of mind. So, which is very nicely pointed out here, that when people or the subjects are peaceful and satisfied materially, spiritually, then they do not worry about going to heaven, because they are fully satisfied, and this earth itself can be heaven for a person who is mentally stable.
Yeah, mental stability is a great gift in Kali Yuga, because most people are always disturbed. Any other points?
To be a pure devotee, you have to just chant the glories of the Lord and everybody's name, Guru Sundara. And you should never be interested in going to heaven.
Any other points?
Even the purport of this verse, I just remember two statements of Ramakrishna Goswami Maharaj. Very old lecture which I had. He says two statements. Krishna consciousness is such a great philosophy. It smashes all philosophies to smithereens. The second statement what he made in that lecture was, if you take shelter of the all-powerful,
none of the less powerful can touch you.
In this fight, it says, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same to Prabhu. Because you have surrendered to Krishna, you have become transcendent. I don't think of these things are affected. And the statement what Maharaj made, right, it is the same. If you take shelter of Krishna, none of the less, I mean all powerful, who is Krishna, none of the less powerful can be in and you will not be disturbed.
Yeah, that's the point. The point is that the devotee is only interested in doing service. He's not interested in his external circumstance. Sometimes our lives are very pleasant externally, and sometimes they're very unpleasant. But a devotee is steady and fixed in his service to Krishna. In other words, he maintains his chanting under all circumstances. He doesn't say, well, you know, today, you know, things are difficult, so I stop chanting. Or tomorrow, things are good, so then I'll stop chanting. But he maintains his service under all circumstances. So regardless whether we're in heaven or we're in hell, for a devotee, he's just fixed in the service of Krishna. I know for myself, we went, when we were brahmacharis, before we got married, we were living here in the ashram. Then we had to travel, I've told you before, through Africa. And we were selling paintings in order to maintain the temple, because back then in the early 90s, there were not, it wasn't a large congregation like we have now. The restaurants weren't as successful. The catering jobs were not successful. So mainly it was the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, who were going out collecting to maintain the temple. So as we traveled through Africa, we had to go through heaven and hell simultaneously. Some of the countries like Tanzania, Zambia, places in Kenya, it was terrible. The living conditions were terrible. We had to live in little hotel rooms. We would cook, we had to like buy a gas cooker, and because we're staying in hotel rooms, we had to like smuggle it in, so we'd smuggle in our gas cooker and everything, and then every night we'd have to cook, you know, something to eat, and you couldn't get, some places in Africa, like Tanzania, the only vegetables you could get were potatoes and cabbage, that's it, there was nothing. You could not get fresh milk, the only milk you could get was UHT. Milk, which is not even milk, it's not really even, you know, it's quite disgusting actually. And we get some rice or some pasta, you know, salt and pepper. We couldn't buy spices a lot of the time. And so we had to cook very simple food. And we were living in these little hotel rooms cooking, and you're not allowed to cook in the hotel room because it's a hotel room. But because we could not eat in the restaurants or anything, we had to cook ourselves. So I remember one night we're cooking, and then the hotel manager knocked on the door. So I opened the door, and the devotee's in the back cooking. And he said, "Are you cooking in here?" I said, "No." So he said, "Oh, okay." So shut the door. So then half an hour later, they come back and they say, "Okay, we want all of you out of the hotel now, because you're cooking in the hotel." So we had to leave, pack up everything, and leave and go to another place. So very difficult circumstances, you know. One of the devotees I was traveling with, he was held up by a knife point on the street. You know, someone took a knife and said, "Hey, give me your money and give me your wallet." So he had to give it the wallet to the person. Even myself, when I was walking down the street one time, one man, he was walking in front of me. There's hundreds of people on the street. He turned around right in front of me. I found his hands go all over me looking for money or wallet or something like that. So it was very difficult circumstances. So we were going through hell. And then we went to the Seychelles, which are tropical islands off the coast of Africa, where it was like heaven. One of the most beautiful places on earth. But we did not mind whether we were in that place or in Africa. We were just fixed and determined to sell as many paintings as we can, to send as much money back as we could to the temple to keep the temple running. So for a devotee, he's not concerned with these external circumstances. Whether he's in a good place or an unpleasant place, he's only absorbed in serving Krishna. And that is what Krishna wants to see from all of us. Are we just fixed on serving him and pleasing him, regardless of what the external circumstances are like? Because actually speaking, we don't have any control on the external circumstances. You can be here in Melbourne, which is the best place to live in the whole world. You know, this is the most livable city in the world. It wins the title every year, practically. The best place in the world to live. The standard of living here is better than anywhere else in the world, practically speaking. And yet you can be here and you can be completely suffering. So it's not really under our control whether you're going to be happy or distressed. That's all according to our previous karma. So a devotee is not worried about his external circumstances. A devotee is worried about one thing. Is Krishna happy? And if a devotee is thinking like that, if that is the consciousness, which is Krishna consciousness, is Krishna happy, then the devotee will always be blissful. He'll always be happy. And then he doesn't worry about what's going on externally. Because the world's crazy anyway, you can't control it. So Maharaj Ambarish, he's just absorbed in serving Krishna. Any points?
But Africa is such a poor country, how could you sell the painting there?
We look for the white men. A lot of, there's a lot of rich people all over the world. You just look for the rich people. I'd walk down the street. We'd walk down the street in Harare, or one of the capital cities in like that. Walk down the street, there's big buildings right, on the side of the street. Like in Melbourne, there's big buildings. So we just go into the building, we go straight to the top floor, because the top floor means the richest company, and we just work down the building. And we just, they're all white men who run all the companies and everything. So we just go in there and we'd sell them paintings, and then we go to the next floor. What's that?
Can you go in the offices?
Yeah, just walk in the office. We just walk in the office and say, you know, such and we did go to the secretary and such is here from Australia. So they'd send a message to the boss and say, so and so is here from Australia. And they say, from Australia, yeah. And say, what does he want? He wants to say something. Oh, yeah, okay, bring him in. So then we go in.
Okay.
So. It was good fun. I could tell you many stories of what we did. We had a lot of fun. Any other points?
We need a good government. Who is God conscious?
A good government. Yeah.
Who is God conscious?
Yeah. That would solve a lot of problems.
Okay.
We don't have to worry because we've got Tony Abbott, so everything is auspicious. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Jagannath Ram.
A pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, anima, lagima, prapti and so on, do not give any pleasure to the devotee. As stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, when a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks that the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell, and he regards material happiness in the heavenly planets to be like a will-o'-the-wisp. As far as the perfection of mystic powers is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of a devotee are engaged in the service of the Lord, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevana Mukti Ruchate, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But the devotee senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means that they are already controlled. Parandrishto Nivartate. Our devotee senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. And even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers the material world to be also spiritual because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the spiritual world and material world is the mentality of service. Nirvanda Krishna Sambandhi Yukta Vairagya Muchyate. When there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. In the construction of a high skyscraper, in the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different, for one is material and the other spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities, and therefore he is no longer attracted by material activities.
So what are the points here?
Mm-hmm.
points. So Prabhupada is pointing out that, and the Bhagavad Gita itself is pointing out that everything in this material world becomes insignificant for a devotee. So the three broad categories of pleasure or enjoyment or achievement in this world are karma, jnana, and yoga. So karma means sense gratification, working hard to enjoy yourself. But for a devotee, that becomes insignificant because he understands that these things will not give ultimate pleasure. It doesn't give pleasure to the soul. You do not become fully satisfied within just by trying to enjoy yourself in this world. Because you say the whole world's doing it, but they're not happy and not satisfied. And then by jnana, you cannot be fully happy also, just by pursuit of knowledge. Even if you have very high knowledge, but still you cannot be fully satisfied. Because you're not engaged positively in active service to Krishna or to God. And then thirdly, there is yoga, which means attaining mystical potency or becoming very powerful. Also, that will not satisfy because it's still based on an egocentric concept of I am the enjoyer. So to become fully satisfied, you have to become a servant of Krishna. So a devotee says everything is insignificant in this world. We have to analyze Maharaj Ambarish's position and his personality. He was the emperor of the universe. We have people in this world who are ruling a country, right? Or ruling a, you know, a certain, they have a certain amount of control in this world. We're talking about someone who is ruling this planet and every other planet that we can see in the universe practically. It's under his control. That's how potent this personality is. And still, he sees that all of it together is insignificant. Why? Because his consciousness is absorbed in the spiritual world. And one whose consciousness is absorbed in the kingdom of God, he sees everything in this world as being frail and limp and pale and unattractive. Because he's attracted to Krishna. Therefore, he becomes unattracted to this world. What is his renunciation of Virakti based upon? It is based upon having a higher satisfaction. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this is one of the most important lessons of the Bhagavad Gita. To give up material pleasure, you have to have something superior. Param dishtva nivartate. If you try to give up the material pleasures of this world without replacing it with a spiritual satisfaction, you cannot maintain that. You'll always go back to the material pleasures in this world. Right? And devotees, you see, that they struggle sometimes with these things. And they fall back down to sense gratification and go back to Krishna consciousness. They oscillate continuously. Why is that? Because they're not situated firmly in the spiritual energy. But when you're firmly situated in the spiritual energy, you cannot be allured or attracted to anything in this material world. That was Maharaj Ambarish's position. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport, very important fact, or a very important point, that for a devotee, everything in this material world becomes spiritual, or spiritualized. Right? Everything we use in this world, which we use in Krishna service, it takes on spiritual potency. So therefore, even if a devotee is in this world, he doesn't see this world as being material, but rather spiritual. And Prabhupada's guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, says there is nothing lacking in this material world except for Krishna consciousness. If you have Krishna consciousness, then actually you can be fully satisfied. This is the spiritual world, practically. Although Prabhupada says we must suffer. That is the difference between the material world and the spiritual world. Even if the devotee's consciousness is completely spiritual, but still there's suffering in this world. Whereas in the spiritual world, there's no suffering. Now, how did Prabhupada explains in the purport, all of Maharaj Ambarish's citizens also became elevated spiritually. So what is the most important factor for us to advance in Krishna consciousness?
Guru.
In spiritual life.
Guru?
Yeah. Or you can take it more broadly. What is the most important? Yeah, it's your association. Sangat teshu pajayate. Sangat sanjayate karma. Prabhupada explains, that Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada elaborates that kam means desire. How do you develop spiritual desires? You know, by the association that you keep and that you get. So if you want to become spiritual, you have to associate with Hare Krishna people. If you want to become materialistic, you have to associate with whoever you want, because you'll become materialistic. So we are products of our association. Even the most advanced people are products of their association. So by Maharaj Jambarisha's purity, the entire kingdom became elevated in consciousness. And you see that even in the Mahabharata, you see that even a personality like Bhishma, who's considered to be one of the 12 Mahajanas, by association with the Kauravas, his consciousness dropped. So when Draupadi was being disrobed, he did not protest. Why was that? Because he was keeping impure association through circumstances. So we have to be very careful in this world not to be locked into impure association. Sometimes our karma is that somehow it's hard to escape because we have family, we have obligations like that. But we have to be careful these things do not drag us down. And ultimately, sannyas means just cutting all of your attachments and just going to Krishna. And at one point in time, we all have to do that in our life. We have to break all of our attachments and commitments and just surrender to Krishna. So, any points?
You are talking about a devotee who is oscillating from who is not firm in his spiritual life. He is oscillating here and there. You're talking about devotee who is not firm in the devotional life or the spiritual life, who is oscillating. So I didn't get the point about that. You're talking about that.
What's the point for you?
The point was like devotee is not firm in his spiritual life and is oscillating.
Yeah, some devotees. We see ourselves.
Yeah. So how to become firm then?
How to become firm? By your association. Associate with advanced devotees and then you become more fixed up. Chant properly. Read the Bhagavatam regularly. Yeah. Engage in the internal energy. Devi Prakriti, Ashrita. Krishna says, Mahatmanas Tumam Parata. Devi Prakriti, Ashrita. So everyone in this movement, we have to dive into the Devi Prakriti, or the spiritual energy. And then you'll be protected from the material. Any other points? The king of this planet, Maharaj Ambarish, thus performed devotional service to the Lord and in this endeavor practiced severe austerity, always satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his constitutional activities. He gradually gave up all material desires. Janeshwar Prabhu.
Severe austerities in the practice of devotional service are of many varieties. For example, in worshipping the deity in the temple, there are certain laborious activities. Sri Vikra Ramadhanityanana, Shungara Tanvandana Madhumara. One must decorate the deity, cleanse the temple, bring the water from the Ganges and Yamuna, continue the routine work, perform arati many times, prepare first class food for the deity, prepare dress and so on. In this way, one must constantly be engaged in various activities and the hard labor involved is certainly an austerity. Similarly, the hard labor involved in preaching, preparing literature, preaching to atheistic men and distributing literature door to door as is of course an austerity. Suppose it being Putraka. Such austerity is necessary. Years of forms of the age. By such austerity in devotional service, one is purified of material existence. Rama Shanay Jahu. Indeed, such austerity need come to the constitutional portion of devotional service. In this way, one can give up material desires. And so, and as soon as one is free from material desires, he is free from the repetition of birth and death.
Any points here?
So the material desires is the one that keeps us here.
Material desires? Yeah, of course. What do you think keeps you here? Spiritual desire? Krishna consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
Any other points? So, Bhagavatam says, tapo divyam, yeah, that if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to perform
austerity.
Tapa. Tapa means austerity. How do we define the word austerity?
Voluntary
inconvenience. Voluntarily accepting something you may not like to accept. If you want to progress spiritually, you have to accept things that you may not like to accept. And you have to reject things that you may not like to reject. Now, that's how you progress. That is called tapasya. So in order to advance spiritually, we have to perform tapo divyam. Tapo divyam means activities which will please Krishna. You give up things which will give Krishna pleasure by you giving them up. Or you accept things which will give Krishna pleasure by accepting them. That is called tapo divyam. So this is how you progress spiritually. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us this principle that in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, then you have to perform tapasya or austerity. There must be some pain and some difficulty. So we must perform austerity for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, in spiritual life, hands up if you'd like to advance in Krishna consciousness. You want to become advanced. So if you want to advance, you have to accept responsibility. Right? If you're just absorbed in your own world, you cannot progress in Krishna consciousness. You have to take a responsibility to assist others to become Krishna conscious. That's when you advance, actually. That's when your advancement becomes rapid and intense and pure. And that's how you, that's the principle. So Krishna says, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he said, one who teaches this knowledge or science to others, he becomes very dear to me. Not one who simply absorbs himself or looks after himself. Right? The most miserable people on this planet are the people who are just absorbed in themselves. The happiest people are people who are totally absorbed in the pleasure of Krishna and of other living entities. So that is the principle. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to look after others. So here we see Maharaj Ambarish. He was doing so much austerity, performing so much difficulty as a leader in order to make others happy. That is the system in Krishna consciousness. So we have to be careful of not performing too much austerity. Rupa Goswami specifically addresses this in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the Nectar of Devotion. He says, if you do too much austerity or take on too much difficulty in your life, especially if it's not for Krishna, then your heart will become hard. Sometimes we like, you know, put too much emphasis on reducing our eating or reducing our sleeping or different things that we can do. But if we do those things too much, our heart can become hardened and we become absorbed in the fact that I am doing all of these things, I am becoming so strong, so that. But then our heart becomes hard and we do not become attractive to Krishna. So for a devotee, he always measures, are his austerities for Krishna's pleasure and for the pleasure of the spiritual master? If he does that, then his heart becomes softened. He does not become hard-hearted, rather soft-hearted. So a devotee has to be careful not to accept too much austerity. And austerity must always be accepted under guidance, under higher advice. Just like one time Prabhupada was in Jagannath Puri in India, on the beach. And Prabhupada was walking down to the beach to take bath. And when all the devotees saw that Prabhupada was going, they all ran after Prabhupada. But the sand was very hot. And they just saw Prabhupada going, so everyone ran to follow Prabhupada. They didn't have shoes on. So when Prabhupada saw them walking across the hot sand, he said to everyone, he said, go and get your shoes. He said, in Kali Yuga, the austerity is no eating meat, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. He said, that is enough austerity in this age. You don't have to do all these extra things. But the one austerity we do take on is to give Krishna to others. And that may be difficult, but we will do that in order to give Krishna pleasure. So, any points?
Generally, Prabhupada used to say that whenever somebody comes at the home time, then it is easier to sleep. So, some people, the name required, the minimum sleep. So, Prabhupada used different stages to keep on the fear. So, is that recommended to do the austerity like that continue, or not recommended if your health is not good?
Yeah, so if you look at Prabhupada's statements on sleep, he says that everyone should have as much as they require. So what do you mean? For me, I sleep about 7 hours on average. Because Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, in one place, he says, if you sleep more than 6 hours, you're in the mode of darkness or ignorance. But I know I can't sleep 6 hours a day. It's not enough for me. But if you look at all of Prabhupada's statements on sleep, then he says that you should sleep as much as is required. So whatever is required. Not too much, but not too little. Krishna says that in the Gita. Don't work too much, don't work too little. Don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't recreate or relax too much, but don't relax too little. He says all these things. So. Any other points? Maharaj Ambarish gave up all attachment to household affairs, wives, children, friends, and relatives, to the best of powerful elephants, to beautiful chariots, carts, horses, and inexhaustible jewels, and to ornaments, garments, and an inexhaustible treasury. He gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary and material. Leela Mai Radhika, you like to read?
Anasakasya Vishayan Yatartham Upayam Jatara. Material possessions can be accepted as far as they can be used in devotional service. Anukulyena Krishna Anusilanam. Anukulyasya Sambalpa Pratikulyasya Prajanam. In preaching, many things considered material are needed. A devotee should not have any attachment for such material involvements as house, wife, children, friends, and cars. Maharaja Ambarishka, for example, had all such things, but he was not attached to them. This is the effect of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Parasanubhavo Virakti Anyantra. One who is advanced in devotional service has no attachment for material things for sense enjoyment, but for preaching to spread the glories of the Lord, he accepts such things without attachment. Anasaktasya Vishyan Yatakam Upin Nijata. Everything can be used to the extent that it can be engaged in Krishna service.
What are the points here? So Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, he says that the more that you become Krishna conscious or spiritually advanced, the less your material desires become. And he said this is the proof of your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Your material desires become less. and your spiritual desires become more. So it is like a scale. Right? The more we take off, we get rid of our material desires, then the more the scale goes up and our spiritual desires become stronger and it becomes weighted. So we have to see practically, are we all becoming advanced in Christian consciousness by our material desires becoming less? So that is natural. That means the bhakti is real. Right? What is the real result of bhakti? How do we know we are following the process properly? Because virakti means detachment, it is actually becoming established. One becomes detached from the material world, the material energy. So if you're practicing your chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, your devotional service, your bhakti process, and still your material desires are increasing, there is something wrong with your application of the process. So you need consultation. Just like if we're sick, we need to see a doctor. So if we're struggling in devotional service, we need to consult with someone who is more advanced, the physician. And by their advice, then we'll learn how to act properly in advancing Krishna consciousness. So we see here that the principle of Vairagya or Virakti, which is taught by Maharaj Ambarish, is the same that Rupa Goswami points out. It's called Yukta Vairagya, Nibandha Krishna Sambandhe, Yukta Vairagya Uchite. Yukta Vairagya means if something can be used in Krishna's service, we use it. Right? If we cannot use something in Krishna's service, we reject it. So it's a simple principle. Right? So Maharaj Ambarish was teaching us this principle. If something can be used in Krishna's service, then employ it. If something cannot, then reject it. Any points?
Okay.
Being very pleased by the unalloyed devotion of Maharaj Ambarish, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the king his disc, which is fearful to enemies and which always protects the devotee from enemies and adversities. So, Sharada Radha, you'd like to read.
The devotee being always engaged in the service of the Lord may not be expert in self-defense, but because the devotee fully depends on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is always sure of protection by the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj said, a devotee is always immersed in the ocean of the transcendental bliss of rendering service to the Lord. Therefore, he is not at all afraid of any adverse situation in the material world. The Lord always promises Kaunteya Patijani Name Bhaktya Pranishati. O Arjuna, you may declare to the world that the devotee of the Lord are never wished. For the protection of the devotees, Krishna's disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, is always ready. This disc is extremely fearful to the non-devotees. Therefore, although Maharaj Ambarish was fully engaged in devotional service, his kingdom was free of all fear of adversity.
Any points?
You mean he handed over the disc to him?
Yeah, that's what it says. He gave him Sudarshana. Any other points?
So the devotees of the Lord are not scared of anything?
Yeah, they shouldn't be. So Prabhupada explains that for a devotee, he lives without fear. So this is another way to measure how advanced we are in Krishna consciousness. How much fear do we have? Because what is one of the main principles of this material world? It is bhaya. And bhaya means?
Yeah.
Fear. The whole world is based on fear. This material creation is based on fear. That's why it is called Kunta, or place of anxiety, because everyone is fearful. So Prabhupada's name is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, which means Abhay Charana. Abhay Charanaravinda. Abhay, which means without fear. So this is one way to understand how advanced are we in Krishna consciousness, because if you are advanced, you will not have fear, because you will depend upon Krishna in all circumstances. And we see ourselves, we're not always like that. Quite often we're very anxious in this material world. And that is simply because we lack shraddha or faith or realization that Krishna will look after us. If we have realization that Krishna will look after us, there is no fear in this material world. But because we're not so advanced, we still have a lot of anxiety about many things. So it's simply because we're not depending on God, on Krishna enough. Because when you depend on Krishna, you will feel fearless. You'll feel always peaceful and satisfied. So, Krishna says, or Prabhupada points out, that Krishna protects the devotee so that his bhakti will not be disturbed. And we've pointed this out, we mentioned this even in recent classes. Krishna makes no guarantee that he will protect our material body. That's not guaranteed. There's nowhere in the Gita or in the Bhagavatam where Krishna says he will protect your material body. He may protect your material body, but he may not. You might get sick, you might get hurt, you might get diseased. Maybe that's Krishna's arrangement to make you more detached from the material world. More detached from the material body. So sometimes it's not guaranteed that Krishna will do like that. But Krishna says he will always protect your bhakti. So if Krishna is giving us a difficult time or an easy time, it is simply because he wants us to become more surrendered to him. So Krishna makes the devotee fearless because the devotee understands under any circumstance I can always serve Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, as we often quote, that nothing material can impede our devotion to Krishna. Nothing in this world can stop our relationship with God, with Krishna. Right? There's nothing in this world. It's only ourselves which limit the relationship. Usually it's just our mind. Our mind says, I don't want to serve Krishna, serve God. But that's our limitation. So, any points? Okay. So, to worship Lord Krishna, Maharaj Ambarish, along with his queen, who was equally qualified, observed the vow of Ekadashi and Dwadashi for 1 year. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
To observe Ekadashi birth and Dwadashi birth means to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those interested in advancing in Krishna consciousness must observe Ekadashi Vrat regularly. Maharaj Amrishya's queen was equally as qualified as the king. Therefore, it was possible for Maharaj Amrish to engage his life in household affairs. In this regard, the word Tulisila is very significant. Unless a wife is equally as qualified as her husband, household affairs are very difficult to continue. Chanakya Pandit advises that a person in such a situation should immediately give up household life and become a vanaprastha or a sannyasi. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife is not agreeable with him should immediately go away to the forest. Because human life is meant for spiritual advancement only, one's wife must be useful, helpful in this endeavor. Otherwise, there is no need of household life.
Any points of interest here?
Success being a man is always a woman.
What?
Being a success of a man is always a woman. So it's applied in both of us. Most of it is a spiritual atmosphere.
Any other point? If the wife is not growing, then take sannyas. Easy to say it. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Ekadashi is the mother of devotion. Ekadashi, he says this in Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his songs. And you see in the songbook of the Vaishnava Charis, one song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Shuddha Bhakata, Charanarino. Bhajana Anukula. So in that particular song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that days like Ekadashi and Janmashtami are the mother of devotion. So we should observe these days very carefully. Like today is Ekadashi. So you should do extra hearing and chanting on this day. Increase your chanting. Many devotees in the past in our movement, they would always chant 25 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on Ekadashi. The whole purpose of Ekadashi is to increase your bhakti. That's why we reduce the eating and the sleeping. You don't reduce the eating and sleeping just so you can lie on the floor of your bedroom and look at the roof. Sometimes the devotees do that. You stop eating, they stop sleeping, and they can't do anything. You're better off to take prasadam and then you can actually hear and chant. So if you can, reduce the eating and sleeping so that you can increase your bhakti. Because on days like Ekadashi, it's very powerful. Today is Ekadashi. So there's a special potency which is there on that day. So it is also mentioned, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that if the wife is qualified, there is no need to renounce household life. One can stay in household life, he doesn't have to worry about becoming a sannyasi, and he can fully advance in Krishna consciousness if the wife is supportive of Krishna consciousness. So if you are in a positive household situation, a grihastha ashram, if husband and wife are cooperating, you can advance all the way back to Godhead together. And if the husband or wife, if they're not practicing, then you can renounce. And then you can fully go to the forest and just chant Hare Krishna and be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Any points? What is your point?
If the wife is not conducive for their spiritual progress,
then you can renounce.
Is it practically feasible?
Well, you don't like your wife, or?
No, it doesn't really like, but generally.
Yeah, well, it means you have to be practical. You have to be practical. You have to consult with your senior devotees. What does it mean?
Because for bhakti, Srila Prabhupada said we don't have to go to a forest. Yes, we practice whatever we are.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, to go to a forest because why? From varnashram or dharma pandya.
I mean, if you look at Prabhupada's purports, he says both things. Like we've already studied in the last several cantos where he says you have to take sannyas. He actually says that. So you must take sannyas. And then the other places where he says that you can be successful in household life if the wife is a devotee wife. So.
I'm not specifically talking about forest going to a forest. Because even when someone takes sannyas in his con, he doesn't go to a forest.
Yeah, oh yeah, those days are gone. Yeah. Thank God. I couldn't handle the forest. In the month of Kartik, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Yamuna, Maharaj Ambarish worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in Madhuvan. So this is one of the 9 symptoms of Bala Bhakti that we read about in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. If someone is advanced, he becomes attached to the Holy Dham. It's a symptom of advancement. So because he's very advanced in Krishna consciousness, he goes to Madhuvan, which is in Vrindavan, and he performs his devotional service there. Devotees like to go to the Holy Dham. That's the one of the principles of advancement in devotional service. Any points? Okay, see you next week. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Please come again, Ki. We'll bring that on.